Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Pura Politica on New York One Noticias. Brian's voice is not quite back yet, so I'm filling in for him one more time today. Stay with us for these 2 hours of hopefully smart conversation we want you to be a part of. Next month, a businessman will move into the White House, and that's setting off the alarm for potential conflicts of interest. We will take a look at that and how a gay rights organization is preparing for the Trump presidency. Also, if you're a smoker living in public housing, get ready. The Obama administration is banning smoking in all units nationwide. In South Korea, citizens want their president to quit, but will she? And later on the show, what's your favorite book of 2016? We'll have the New York Times top 10, and we'd love to hear yours. And we'll begin today with a conversation about our next president, a businessman with real estate ventures spread out across the globe, and the many potential conflicts of interest between Donald Trump, the businessman, and Donald Trump, the president. My next guest dug into these potential conflicts and looked at how they may affect the foreign policy of the United States under President Trump. Eric Lipton is an investigative reporter for the New York Times. Hi, Eric. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Eric, before we get to your sprawling investigation into the potential conflicts of interest President Trump will face because of the global reach of the Trump Organization, I want to touch on the news that Donald Trump has said that he'll nominate retired General James Mattis for Defense Secretary. There's a different kind of conflict of interest hurdle that Mattis will have to clear in order to be confirmed, right? What is it, and why are those protections in place?
Well, he is a retired general, but he has not been out of his position in the military in a formal oversight capacity long enough to fulfill a requirement that you need in order to be named Secretary of Defense. So therefore, he's going to need a waiver by Congress to allow him to serve in this position. And there, I guess, there's a tradition and a requirement, in fact, that there be a civilian leader at the Department of Defense who is not a general or has a military rank. They certainly can be retired from that position. But they want, essentially, there to be some distance between the person that oversees the military forces of the United States and the military forces themselves. And we're a country that is not a country that's led by its military. It's a country led by civilian leaders. You look back to a country like Pakistan, where in the history you had the guy who was simultaneously the general and the president. It's something that is not part of our tradition. And so, President-elect Trump has nominated someone who's going to need that waiver. At the same time, he's nominated someone who is very well respected, and to some extent, I think is among the least controversial of his nominees for his cabinet. So it looks as if it's likely that he'll get the waiver that he needs.
You don't think that it's going to be a problem to be confirmed, correct?
I mean, I can't predict that, but my impression from what I've seen and the way that Mattis has been received and the extent to which he's respected by both Democrats and Republicans leads me to suspect that he will likely get confirmed, and there'll be less controversy around him than some of the other nominees for a cabinet.
Right. So on Trump's potential conflicts of interest, we heard Donald Trump, the candidate, talk about this during the campaign, right? Saying, well, if it's a conflict of interest, I'm going to leave my business and I'm going to leave my business to my children. But that is a conflict of interest in itself, correct?
I mean, the problem is that the way that the president-elect defines a conflict of interest is in a legal sense. And it is true that he is exempt from the federal law and federal regulations that prohibit him from taking any particular action that benefits his financial interest. The president and the vice president are exempt. It's just a tradition that has existed in the United States law for some time, based on the presumption that they are involved in everything, and so they therefore they can't they would have a conflict no matter what they did, even if they had, you know, a tiny holding in a single company, they would in some way be conflicted. But even if he is exempt from those rules and therefore not potentially going to be subject to a formal violation of conflicts of ethic, conflicts, you know, of interest, that if he takes a step, for example, I mean, in terms of him, he's going to appoint the head of the General Services Administration as president. The General Services Administration is essentially the landlord of the federal government. It manages all the buildings. But so he's going to appoint the new head of the GSA. At the same time, the GSA is the landlord at the old post office building, which is now the new International Trump Hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue, a couple blocks from the White House. So he is both going to be in that situation, the essentially the landlord and the tenant. I mean, that's on its face is a conflict of interest, even if it's not a formal violation of conflicts of interest rules. And so, I mean, I could unfortunately go on with other examples in which that kind of situation exists.
The interesting part also will be whether voters care about his potential conflict of interest. And now we want to hear our listeners' opinions. You can call us and tell us what you think about the potential of conflicts of interest during the Trump presidency. You can give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That is 212-433-9692. And I'm really interested in that, Eric, because a lot of people elected Donald Trump knowing that he was a businessman, and that was the main reason why they picked him, because he wasn't a traditional politician. So when they voted for him, they already knew that he was connected to a huge empire that sprawls all over the world, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those classic political issues that really affects different segments of the population in radically different ways. And it has already become a huge rallying call for liberals who are angry, upset, disappointed at the outcome of the election. This is a topic that they can unify around, that motivates their base. It rallies the Democrats in Congress are feverishly writing letters objecting to the apparent conflicts, demanding that there be investigations. But at the same moment, although it's a huge motivating force for liberals and Democrats, it sort of seems like largely a non-issue for Republicans in Congress and for the rest of the American public that also that put him into office as president. And it isn't really resonating with them, at least so far. The Republicans, there's a good story in Politico yesterday that they interviewed a bunch of Republican leaders who were saying, let's see what happens. Let's let him get his house in order, see to the extent to which he deals with these conflicts. But they are so far completely rejecting any calls for any kind of a formal investigation. There have been at least a dozen letters by Democrats. The Democrats, to some extent, see this as a political opportunity to try to rally against Trump and raise support for their causes. So, but it's interesting in American politics when you can have an issue that can so differently speak to different segments of the population, and this is one of those cases.
Right, and like we said before, like the president in himself cannot have a conflict of interest, but there's something in the Constitution, right, that could be a problem for Donald Trump, correct?
There's a clause in the Constitution which has never really been tested properly, and it's the emoluments clause, which myself and just about everyone else in the United States didn't even know what the word meant until the president elect was won. And it's a provision which means a payment or gift. You can't. It goes back to the birth of the United States, and when we were separating from a royal oversight, and there was a strong feeling that government officials should not be accepting any type of payment or gift from a foreign power, because that would be some way to influence or control the president or a federal official. And so it's just been a provision that's stuck there in the Constitution and never has rarely had much relevance. I mean, if among the instances in which it came up is when Obama got a peace prize, and the question was whether or not the Nobel Peace Prize was associated with a foreign government and whether or not he could accept it, because and so there have been circumstances
and Eric,
involving
that was okay though, right?
Yes,
he could accept the prize.
It was ultimately determined that 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 money was not from a government entity, right. As I understand it. There was a formal opinion that was issued by the federal government agency to evaluate it. So there have been many written opinions by the Department of Justice and the Office of Government Ethics that have done different interpretations as to whether or not what might or might not be a violation of this clause. But it hasn't really had much of a court test because it just hasn't, no one has really attempted to challenge it head on because generally they followed the advice of the various sort of legal advisors. And so basically now you have, you know, this is, it appears as if it's going to be tested because you have, I mean, all kinds of examples already that have come up that will, that may be violations. We just don't know. So
right,
for
like
example,
one of them, like, isn't it, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Bank of China is a tenant at Trump Tower?
Right. That's right. So the Bank of China is a state entity of the government of China. And it is a tenant in Trump Tower, and so it's paying rent to the Trump Organization. Now, could you argue that it is not Donald Trump himself who's receiving that payment? Because even if he owns the company, it's the money, I'm sure, goes through some LLC that, you know, that is a corporate entity in and of itself. And so, therefore, you could argue that Trump himself is not receiving that payment. But then similarly, his hotel, the new hotel that just opened, or any hotel around the world, when diplomats or foreign government officials stay at that hotel, they're paying their bill. I mean, the payment comes from a foreign government. I mean, those are just two of many examples that I'm sure that will be cited and I presume will be tested in some way, either through a court challenge or through congressional consideration.
Okay, we're going to take some phone calls. We're going to hear from Reba in Manhattan. Reba, good morning. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Yes, it was a well-known fact that Trump was a wealthy man when he ran and that he had financial interests all over the world and conflicts, yet the media ignored that. And all they did was be led by the right wing and attack Hillary for the bogus email scandals and the Clinton Foundation, which is a charity, not a slush fund. The fact of the matter is Trump got a free ride from the media while Hillary was mercilessly attacked.
But Reba,
and if it wasn't
Reba,
for that, we would not have this bum in the White House.
Okay, but so you obviously have a problem if there are some conflict of interests with Trump as president.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your opinion. How about Christine? Christine, good morning. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show. What do you think?
Hi. I think it's very important that Trump has these kinds of conflicts of interest. And he is going to the White House. I really think there should be a formal process established by the Congress to investigate what the situations are and review the situation and guarantee that there's no problem while he's the president.
Thank you very much, Christine. So, Eric, you were saying before, maybe Congress doesn't feel really like investigating that much, knowing also that Republicans are in control of both houses in Washington.
Yeah, okay. I mean, and I'm happy to address the first caller's question as well. And first of all, you know, we did do a lot of stories on Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton emails, and we could have a debate as to whether or not we did too many of those stories. And, you know, you both sides have some points on that. I won't dispute that. At the same time, though, it is certainly true that we did quite a number of substantive stories on Donald Trump and his global business interest and his financial operations and his taxes and his treatment of women and his treatment of blacks. As a rising young real estate executive, so we did a lot of really pretty strong enterprise on Donald Trump as well. And you know, I think a fair number of the readers that are listeners that criticize us on that may not have read all those stories. And that's you know, but we did stories on both of the candidates and pretty strongly, I think. On the second point about Congress, the Republicans control the House, they control the Senate, so therefore they control the creation of any investigatory committee. They also control the subpoenas, and only the majority controls the subpoenas. You can't issue a subpoena as a Democrat now. And even so, the president has certain authorities to be immune from congressional investigations and has presidential privilege, White House privilege, to reject certain requests for documents or for information. So whether or not Congress is going to actually assign an oversight committee to examine the potential conflicts of interest is a big open question. And to some extent, it's as much of a political question as it is as a question about whether or not there's a real conflict. And I think that it's going to come down to, you know, if this issue resonates broadly across the population in a way that polls show that it is the American public, you know, across the board is concerned about it and motivated and demanding action by Congress, I think that you'll likely have an investigative committee. If it isn't, then I think there will not be anything that formally investigates it.
Right. Let's hear from Francisco. Francisco from Bloomfield, New Jersey. Good morning. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. It's going to be an interesting next 4 years with Donald Trump, especially since he's been, you know, a business mogul, you know, throughout his life and has had his hands in every kind of business venture that you could imagine, especially in real estate throughout the world. So it's going to be very tough to, you know, not see or at least imagine a conflict of interest in one way or another. You're going to get, you know, people from the Democratic side or people who are against Trump who are always going to see his dealings in one way or another as a conflict of a sort. And then you're going to see, you know, people from the Republican side not really make a big issue of it. But at the end of the day, it's going to be an interesting next 4 years. I just, you know, find the constitutional clause very interesting because Donald Trump is, you know, fairly wealthy man, and I don't see him receiving, like, you know, a gold phone from a telecommunication company just because, you know, they want some kind of favor from him. You know,
right.
That was his part of his platform, that he is not going to be influenced by any kind of major corporation to get what they want. So, you know, I'm hoping that he's going to stand by that.
So you're hopeful, Francisco. You're hopeful. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because, you know, look, you know, I know that there's a lot of disagreement with him in position, you know, especially from, you know, the Democratic Party and people, you know, that are a part of it, you know, with a lot of things that he's said and done throughout his, you know, his life, you know, that, you know, raise a lot of questions with regard to how he, you know, treats people and how he thinks of people. But, you know, we got to give this man an opportunity. You know, I think he's a refreshing, you know, change with regard to how we've had the same old kind of politician come into office with their pedigree, you know, and with their experience. And, you know, I'm hoping that this man will be able to really bring about some change. Now, with regard to that change, you know, it varies with, you know, who wants what kind of change. When you talk about people from West Virginia, you know, you're looking at people who want, you know, their jobs back.
Right,
know,
and they might know. And they might not really care about anything other than that.
Exactly. You know, but at the end of the day, I don't think that this, you know, President Trump is going to, you know, really be influenced by, like I said, by a gold phone.
Thank you very much, Francisco. Thank you so much.
You're
and
welcome.
Eric, you and your colleagues write that in Turkey specifically, it's a really there are some contradictions because Trump has business interests, but also can you explain to us why do you think there's a contradiction?
In that situation, he has recently completed through a branded agreement in which he has paid both probably a fee and a commission based on the sales of the units in the Trump Tower there in Turkey. Trump Towers, there's two of them. And there's also a mall that is shopping mall in between the two towers. He was critical during his campaign of Muslim extremists that were involved in terror attacks, and he suggested that that there should be a ban on anyone entering the United States of Muslim descent, which was a very radical idea. And And for a country like Turkey, which is essentially a Muslim country, it wasn't too popular, you can imagine. So the president of Turkey was like, wait a second, you know, should the name Donald Trump be on a building in our country?
Right.
If this guy is saying that we can't even enter the United States as citizens of our country. And the mall owner also was talking about removing the Trump name, because who's going to go shop at a shopping mall that's got the name of someone who doesn't want to let you enter their country? So then there's a coup attempt in Turkey. And after the coup attempt, Donald Trump is speaking very publicly in a supportive way of the actions by the president of Turkey to crack down on dissidents, which has been quite extreme. And journalists have been arrested and newspapers shut down and other, you know, people removed from power and very, very, very aggressive and some people think over-aggressive response to the coup attempt there.
So do you think, because we know that Turkey is an ally of the United States, and now you're mentioning also how Donald Trump has spoken highly of Turkish President Erdogan. Do you think that him having business interests in that country could in some way impact the policy, like foreign policy, knowing also that Turkey is like an ally in the fight against ISIS in neighboring Syria?
And that's the problem is that once he has a stake in that country, it you create such questions. So Donald Trump himself, in a radio interview, as he was running for president, says, I have a little conflict in Turkey, you know, because I have a building or two buildings there. So he himself was sort of making fun of the fact that he's got interest there. So the problem is not whether or not this actually is influencing his positions, because we don't know that, and it may not be, but it's that it might be, and we can't know for sure. And when you have a financial interest, it creates the potential for a conflict of interest. So what it does is it creates an endless string of stories by newspaper reporters like me and at other newspapers, mm-hmm. which we have to raise these questions. And it's a cycle that I don't see how it ends. You could pick, you know, a dozen countries around the world where we could have the same conversation, different players, different buildings, where the same kinds of issues emerge that intersect with foreign policy.
Okay, let's hear from John in Syosset, New York. John, good morning. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
How are you?
Very good.
So just speaking to what, I mean, Trump himself was, quote, I'm paraphrasing, he said something like back on the campaign trail that he could shoot someone in the middle of the street and he'd get away with it. So I just feel like all of this is all for nothing. I feel like he's going to get away with everything. His supporters, every time there's something that you could say about Trump having conflict or whatever, the media is just doing this so that they can, you know, the liberal media and everything like that. So I just feel like it's all for nothing. And I just hope that there's a little solace in that he might ruin his family name and ruin his business interests around the world. And that's the only thing I could hope for. Have a nice day.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you very much for your comment. And Eric, another country that we know that Trump has business interests in is Ireland, if I'm correct. And the company wants to build a seawall that it says will protect its golf course along the West Coast. What's the problem there?
Yeah, I mean, in this situation, he actually owns a golf course. He has one in Ireland and one in Scotland. Mm-hmm. Seems like a pretty innocuous thing to own. It couldn't cause much international controversy, you would think. But in this situation, though, the North Sea is rising, and the waters are starting to come into the golf course on occasion and threaten the golf course and its future economic viability. And so he has proposed that there be a wall that's built along the edge of part of the golf course to prevent the water from coming in. And the thing that's sort of a bit almost comical is that in the application for the permit to build the wall, they cite climate change as a reason for the need to do this. But this is the same president who at times has mocked at the idea of climate change and suggested that it's not real and not happening. So, but when it comes to his business interest, then is seeking a permit to do something, citing that same phenomenon. At the same time, the wall would require the displacement of, and this sounds a little minor on the scale of global issues, but there's a endangered snail apparently that lives in the area where the wall would be, and so there's some environmentalists in Ireland who are protesting the idea of putting this wall in because of the threat that it would cause to this endangered snail. So again, it seems, you know, that it's sort of a minor issue, but But then you have some. Now you have the company of the president, soon to be the president. And what would the? How does an Irish local government body, you know, does it have to consider the potential international kind of foreign policy implications of whether or not to allow a seawall be built and the possibility of alienating the president of the United States and perhaps him, you know, retaliating in terms of economic or foreign policy against Ireland because of a seawall. So again, probably he would not. Almost certainly he would not. You know, do I think he would even consider that? No. But is that a question that emerges because of he is financially involved in something at the same time as he is going to be in charge of U.S. foreign policy? That's the scenario that we're in and the reason we have to ask these questions.
And we can say also there's precedent because Donald Trump himself acknowledged that he had brought up in a conversation with Nigel Farage, a leader of the Independence Party in the UK, that he had talked to him about some windmills that would block the view of his golf course in Scotland. Is that correct? And also, and he has basically suggested that Theresa May, the Prime Minister in the UK, should nominate Nigel Farage as the UK ambassador in Washington.
Yeah. So again, you know, another part of the map and another issue that we are already involved in the debate over in Scotland, where he has another golf course, and he has been very vocal in opposition to windmills that for energy purposes. And he, in particular, has been opposed to the potential that these wind farms would have on the views from that golf course and his second golf course there. Mm-hmm. So now we're talking about Scotland. And so in this conversation that he had with some of the Brits who came and visited Trump Tower after he president-elect was involved in this transition, he brought up his concerns again about the wind farms and the impact that they could have on. I don't know if he specifically mentioned his golf course, but he asked them to join an effort to try to stop the wind farms from being built. And so again, here you have a potential mixing of his personal financial interest and the foreign policy interest. And it's another story, another headline, another debate.
Let's hear now from Anthony in West New York. Anthony, good morning. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Yeah, hey, I just a question about who's negotiating the lease at Trump Plaza for the Secret Service. I'll take my question off the air.
Oh, thank you very much, Anthony. I'm not sure about that. I don't know if you have any information on that.
I think he's probably talking about Trump Tower, and the New York Post had reported that the Secret Service concluded that it needed something like a floor or two of space because that's essentially going to be like the White House North now. If in fact they are going to occupy a floor to a space, we're talking about considerable rent payments that would have to occur between the United States government and the Trump Organization. And I have not done my own reporting on that. So all I know is that there was a story in the New York Post which suggested that they were asking for potentially two floors that would probably be the General Services Administration, the same agency. And again, talk about a potential conflict. I mean, they're in charge of real estate for the United States government. I don't know if they rent space. If they're the ones that run you. I don't know. Short answer, I don't know.
Okay, good enough. Linda in Hicksville, Long Island. Linda, good morning. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Buenos dias, and thanks for taking my call. I'm so glad for the Brian Lehrer Show. It's the one place that people can stand up when you ask do the people, do the public care. People have to be comfortable in saying that they care. I care. I am offended by the way that this arrogant man goes into office with all of these conflicts. To him, it's no conflict. I think we're entering a very dark period in American history is run by generals like a junta, where the notion of abortion, again, is taken back 20 years. I don't think that he has any reverence or respect for constitutional law. Trump has gotten into power by breaking rules. This is his MO. And I think that he has little respect. And I'm very happy that the media is another way to expose this man. It's very, very critically important that we stand up and that we object. It's going to just get worse, not better.
We'll see. Thank you so much, Linda. Thank you. And let's hear from John. John in Richfield Park, New Jersey. John, good morning. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. The thing that's most disconcerting about all this is that we seem to have elected somebody who is devoid of ethics. And I say that as opposed to the law. I mean, the law is where what we've agreed upon as society has been codified, and ethics is that area of trust where those in power and those of the rest of us citizenry have to act with respect to that, to the spirit of the law. And Donald Trump has shown, he admitted in the middle of the debate that his way of looking at things when he was talking about his taxes was to look for the daylight in the law and leverage that daylight in order to benefit him. So when we're talking about conflict of interest, which is where I believe this conversation started, there's a certain amount of trust there. The idea is that you're putting someone, giving them the levers of power and expecting them to pull them for the good of the country. And already it would seem that his idea is to this is just another opportunity to benefit himself.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Thank you. And one thing that I'm really interested in, Eric, is that, we know that Donald Trump said that in the next few days he's going to speak about how he's going to separate himself from the business operations of the Trump empire, business empire. And then we saw that information, Donald Trump gave that information with tweets on Twitter. And then the United States Office of Government Ethics wrote also like a few tweets on this matter. Are we now communicating like government offices are giving all this information now via Twitter instead of like talking directly to the president-elect?
Yeah, the situation is quite unfortunate, I think, because in 140 characters, you can't really answer the necessary questions. So Donald Trump's series of three tweets on his forthcoming statement for December 15th that he says he's going to, you know, they're in the midst of signing legal documents in which he will completely separate himself from business operations, essentially is what he said, and that he thought this wasn't required by law, but something that was good for the visibility and something that he was committed to doing. And then this burst of tweets from the Office of Government Ethics, in which they're proclaiming great satisfaction with the fact that Donald Trump has vowed to divest his holdings and therefore eliminate his conflicts. And Trump had not made such a statement in his tweets that he was divesting his holdings, simply that he was going to remove himself from his business operations. And I think it really points to the dangers of attempting to work through such complicated policy issues through tweets. It just isn't possible. And so ultimately the Office of Government Ethics essentially issued an apology that said that, it hinted at perhaps had misunderstood Trump's tweets, and that all it was saying was that it's repeating its position, which is that the only way that he can really confront the range of conflicts is to divest of his properties, and which is a radical idea. He would have to sell the Trump Organization. And
but if he decides to do that, that would be extremely beneficial for him tax-wise. Mm-hmm. Isn't that correct?
Not necessarily, because if he really was going to liquidate it, the only way that you can get the tax benefits is if you put it into treasuries, like treasury bonds or mutual funds, and so he couldn't turn it over to his children. He couldn't say, okay, I'm selling my assets and my children are buying it. Because he would then have to pay the full tax burden of that, all the increases in values of all those real estate properties. But if he were to liquidate it and put it in treasury bonds and then let someone manage that money, then he could get a big tax benefit. He wouldn't have to pay capital gains on that. That's a provision that allows people coming into the federal government to eliminate their conflicts of interest without having a big tax hit. It's something, but I doubt. You know, if he were to be willing to take the radical step of selling his assets, that he would liquidate them and not turn them over to his children. So he would only get the tax benefit if he does actually liquidate them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll have to leave it there for today. Thank you so much, Eric Lipton. Eric Lipton is an investigative reporter for the New York Times. Eric, congratulations for the great work that you do, investigative work that you do in the New York Times.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, no more smoking. No more smoking for tenants living in public housing. Is that a fair ban? Stay with us.